Good morning and welcome to episode 62 of Coffee with the Coder. Thank you for joining us today. Before I give you Paula and these questions, I just want to mention that we're doing a replay webinar tomorrow for diabetes and ICD-10. So if that's something interesting to you, go over to aq-iq.com and get yourself a subscription. Sign up for the webinar and also get a subscription to aqiq.com. So we're glad to have you here for Coffee with the Coder, and we've got some wonderful things to talk about. Hey, Paula, again.
Good morning.
I'm going to start with this question from our friend Michelle. She went to the AQIQ website, and under the drop-down where it says Ask, it says, Coffee with the Coder. So she went there and sent in this question. And here's the background information that she says. The patient had a pancreas and kidney transplant in 1999. So what is that? Almost 20 years ago. Prior to the transplant, the patient had type 1 diabetes mellitus with end-stage renal disease. Post-transplant, it is documented as the patient now has developed mild type 2 DM that is controlled with oral medication. Per follow-up consult from transplant specialist from this past December, the specialist says he had diabetic retinopathy prior to the transplant, and now diabetic retinopathy is stable. The ophthalmologist consult note says the diabetic retinopathy is stable. So how do I code for the diabetic retinopathy? Is it considered retinopathy from the type 1 since the patient was diagnosed with it prior to the transplant? Or now is it retinopathy from type 2 with the current post-transplant diagnosis?
Okay, awesome. Yeah, so thanks for that question, Michelle. And, let me just chase a rabbit here for just a second. It was pretty funny when you said 1999, Pam, because, and you said it was 20 years ago, because I never think about it being 20 years. I think, oh, my goodness, Prince, the song 1999, and, what I was doing, but it doesn't feel like 20 years. So that was just, oh, wow, 20 years. Anyway, back to the question. That was pretty funny. So for this question, we kind of went down a wrong path, because sometimes the way the question is asked, it makes you think, oh, well, let me dig and try to find the answer. And then you go, wait a minute. So let me tell you what we did, because it's kind of comical when you go back and look at it. We went down the path, and we determined we were asking the wrong question. First, we knew already from coding rules that you can't report type 1 and type 2 diabetes together. There's an excludes 1 note. We knew that there was an excludes note. We didn't specifically know the details off the top of our head, but we knew that you would not be reporting those together. So we're thinking, how can we paint this picture? The patient had type 1. They had the surgery for the transplant. And so the next question we thought was, can the surgery cure type 1 diabetes? And as we did the research, we realized, yes, it can cure type 1 diabetes. So the type 1 can resolve, but the patient had a manifestation that was created by the type 1 that was no longer present. So the question is, do I report it as type 1 with retinopathy, or do I report it with type 2? And now, post the surgery, he's stated to have type 2. Now, it doesn't clearly say that the transplant cured the type 1. So wouldn't be an assumption, but the fact that you're saying type 2, you can't have both in the same body at the same time, says to me, well, yeah, probably was. Then we decided to get out our ICD-10 manual. When we looked up diabetes, of course, like we said, like we expected, there's an excludes 1 note for type 1 and type 2. So absolutely, we validated they cannot be reported together. But guess what else we found? There is a code, and this was something that we didn't recollect off the top of our minds because we're not always coding these situations. It's not common to code these. So there is a code that describes post-pancreatectomy diabetes. So that would be the most appropriate code to define the situation. The type 1 or type 2, is not relevant, but the manifestation is. So our code of post-procedural post-pancreatectomy diabetes actually codes to E13, which is other specified diabetes. And then we would go with the last characters of 319, which the complete description is other specified diabetes with unspecified diabetic retinopathy without macular edema. That would be the appropriate code. So the type 1 and type 2, since the patient had the specific surgery he had, the post-procedural surgery for the transplant, you're going to report E13.319 rather than the E10 or E11, which is type 1 or type 2. So there you go.
Thank you. I'm so happy you picked that because that goes right along with the webinar tomorrow.
Awesome.
Now we have a question from Joyal, and she's in an inpatient rehab. She sent us an email. She says we have a discrepancy between coding and what the PPS team feels. Coding said I-24.8, other forms of acute ischemic heart disease. PPS does not want to put that on the ERFPI. Can it be used on the ERFPI? She says, I asked for a query, but coding is unsure if one should be done because the linkage is there, but the verbiage is turning the PPS team off. The physician documents, and I don't know how to say this word, troponemia, likely due to demand ischemia, and she did send a screen print, which I'm not going to attempt to read to you.
Right. So one of the things, and this is specific for inpatient rehab facilities, is that you cannot report an unconfirmed condition. It sounds like the coders, after we're reading it again, it sounds like the coders wanted to report that unconfirmed condition. But on the ERFPI and on the UB04 claim form, so for coding for ERF encounters, you cannot report unconfirmed condition. So when the doctor says troponemia likely due to demand ischemia, that doesn't confirm for me that the patient was having demand ischemia the way that is worded. So I would say a query would be most appropriate. Now, if there was clinical evidence that there was demand ischemia, and you know this was the only place it was stated in the record, it wasn't stated anywhere else that the patient actually did have demand ischemia, then you could confirm, yes, there was demand ischemia, and you would report it, but the troponemia would be reported as an other specified abnormal finding of blood chemistry. So without a confirmed statement, the coder can't report, like I said, that unconfirmed demand ischemia in the ERF setting. A query absolutely would determine if the condition existed, or I don't say absolutely would determine if the condition would existed, but it would give you more clarity, hopefully, if the physician responded of whether it existed or not, or whether it was just possible. So it would clarify for you that, because the doctor would either say, yep, patient had it, or he would say, you know, it was unconfirmed. If there, like I said, if clinical evidence of the demand ischemia, then that would elicit a query for me. To determine if it was, you know, if he gave a better description of, you know, was the demand ischemia present, and he's already saying that the troponemia was likely due. So the best code for that without confirmation that it existed and was truly due to would be R7989, which is other specified abnormal finding of blood chemistry. So I agree with you. A query would be appropriate, and your PPS coordinators, are appropriate really at not reporting it because it is stated as likely, and so they would report the R code.
Thank you. Okay, now we have a couple of anonymous questions, and maybe we have time to get to them. This first one says, for outpatient therapy, can you bill for services that include initial evaluation if the plan of care is not signed until after the first visit?
Okay, yeah, you can. The way that you can do that is if there is a signed order, you are covered. If there is no signed order, no. But if there is a signed order, that covers that first visit. So, yes, you can.
Thank you. And another outpatient question that came in anonymously is, do we add modifier 59 when OTPT evals are performed on the same day?
Actually, no. Now, this was a glitch in the NCCI edits that was supposed to be corrected by CMS. It actually was corrected by CMS, and they implemented it in the edit tables the day that it was actually implemented. So they the day it was implemented, they also, I guess, implemented that it was not effective. I guess I should say it a little better. So the 59 modifier is not required when you report both an OT and a PT evaluation on the same day. However, let me give you this caveat. There are some payers who do not always keep their systems up to date. And we had a payer on our board once for a company that I worked for, and he said sometimes they don't intentionally update their information in their systems. And I don't know this is true for everybody, but he said they intentionally don't update their systems quickly because it's going to help them deny and reject claims. Now, that would be ding, ding, ding. So you know why we're fighting to get our claims paid so much and sending in the information of how things are covered. But some payers, when they don't update their tables quick enough, you know, for however long this edit was out there that it should not have been, and they might have that wrong table in their payment processing system, then they may reject it, making you think that that 59 is needed. So at any rate, it is not needed. It's really not appropriate to append it, but it may be a situation that if they are requiring that 59, you need to have a conversation with the payer and say, you know, hey, this edit isn't effective anymore, and how can we get this corrected, because we want to be reporting correctly.
Thank you. I'm going to try to slip this other one in because I think it relates to that one. It's also anonymous from an outpatient perspective. This person says, is modifier 25 required on an E&M for a provider who is also performing therapy services like ultrasound or eSTEM?
Yes, it is. It is absolutely related. I think that when they had a change in the NCCI edit table, I think it's been a few renditions back, they made a lot of changes to the outpatient therapy services, and then they realized, ding, 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 uh-oh, it shouldn't be that way. So for a short period of time, again, those NCCI edits required that modifier 25 to be on an evaluation and management service when the provider was also performing a therapy service, like some modality like eSTEM, like you said, or ultrasound. So currently, it is no longer in the table. It was made ineffective, ineffective, and so modifier 25 is not required. But again, remember, you might have those payers who have some changes that they've not made in their systems to be accurate with the current NCCI edit tables. So they may require you to put that modifier 25, and again, that would be a discussion with those payers because it's not technically required.
So. Thank you. That's all the ones I have right this minute. And now it's time to mug somebody. Those of you who are dialing in for the first time may not be aware of our mugging situation here. AQIQ has produced a specially branded mug, and it's got our little hero on one side and our brand on the other side. So you can have AQIQ on both sides of your mug. And we will send this free to someone who asks a non-anonymous question that we use on an episode. So for today's episode, there are two people in the running, Michelle and Joel. So I am stirring up the names on my desk, and let's figure out who's the winner. Joel, congratulations. Thank you all for joining us 2 weeks from today on May 6th. We'll be back at 10:10. Tomorrow we'll have the diabetes webinar, and watch your email. Be sure you're on our email list so you'll know what all is coming up. And we thank you for attending today and look forward to speaking with you soon.